convinced of the Assad regime's culpability.
There's a lot of publicly available information that we already know that is very convincing.
U.S. intelligence officials will brief members of Congress today on evidence that's said to link the regime to last week's chemical attack near Damascus.
In a series of pointed questions to the president, House Speaker John Boehner asks for answers on what the president hopes to achieve by a military campaign, what are the options if Syrian President Bashar al-Assad retaliates, what the U.S. would do if a terrorist organization gains control of the country, and whether Congress will need to appropriate funds.
SRN's Wally Hines on Capitol Hill. Also at SRNNews.com, there is a proposed settlement between the NFL and thousands of former players to end lawsuits accusing the league of hiding known risks of concussions. A federal judge says the league and former players hope to settle the lawsuit for $765 million. On Wall Street, the Dow is up about 47 points, the NASDAQ Composite Index ahead 35, and the S&P is trading 8 points higher. This is SRN News.
Good afternoon, Tucson. At 12:02, I'm Ray Allen at AM 1030, KVOY, The Voice. This news update is provided by the Arizona Daily Star. A Tucson Unified School District teacher who taped a second-grade student to a chair has resigned. The teacher says that she was following the mother's instructions to do whatever it would take to get the student to sit still. The mother reported the incident to Tucson police. The teacher says the girl was disruptive to the entire class. The family's attorney is saying that the mother did not authorize using tape to discipline the girl. And two men accused in a homicide of a woman found at Reddington Pass last month have been cleared for now. The Pima County Attorney's Office says there isn't enough evidence to hold the pair. However, they could be charged later if more evidence comes up. The woman was found on August 14th after one of the suspects flagged down a passerby and asked them to call police about a person who committed suicide. And Governor Jim Brewer has named Air Force National Guard Colonel Michael McGuire as the new head of the Arizona National Guard. He'll replace Major General Hugo Salazar on September 9th. The Arizona National Guard has been plagued with numerous problems under Salazar. McGuire has been the commander of the 162nd Fighter Wing for the past 2 years. He'll oversee an agency of about 8,000 personnel. Radar vans going to be out starting at 1:30 this afternoon till 4. On Sarnoff Drive near Kenyon Drive, watch for another one near L.M. Prince Elementary School in the 200 block of Prince Road. Weather for Tucson this Thursday afternoon. Expecting about a 60% chance of some more showers hitting the Tucson area, with winds picking up around 5 o'clock this afternoon. A 50% chance of scattered thunderstorms tonight, low at 74. Right now, heading into the Buckmaster Show at AM 1030 KVOY.
It's noon, August 29th, and that means you're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. I am not Bill Buckmaster. I am Mark B. Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com. The Double B is on vacation, again, and his faithful cast of radio rookies are filling in for him this week. Joining me in the studio today to help co-host the show is the other half of the paid staff of TucsonCitizen.com, the intrepid, the spectacular, the incomparable Anthony Jimeno. Anthony, how you doing today?
Good, Mark. Yeah, I hope nothing happens to the TucsonCitizen.com staff right here, as we're all rarely in the same place.
AJ's here because our show today is all about Arizona athletics. Tomorrow is the opening game of the Wildcats football season, a 7 p.m. kickoff against the Lumberjacks of Northern Arizona University. Our guests on the show today are Susie Mason, the UA's Assistant Athletics Director for Event Operations, and following Susie is the Director of Recruiting for the Wildcats, Matt Dudick. And we'll close the show with Doug Haller, writer for the Arizona Republic, who covers ASU and the Pac-12. Well, if you've been to a game in the past 10 years or so at U of A, whether a football game at Arizona Stadium or a basketball game at McHale, and you had a nice time, you can thank Susie Mason, the UA's events director. She's joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line to talk a little bit about what it takes to pull off such a huge event as tomorrow's game. So, Susie, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I gave all the credit to you, of course, but I'm sure there's lots and lots of people that are needed to put off such a massive event as having 60,000 people come watch a football game. So how many people do you actually employ or get the volunteer to pull off something like tomorrow?
All total for basically campus impact, it's close to 1,000. We have in-stadium just around about 600. And there is a combination between those that are, working staff, our paid hourly staff, a lot of paid students, and then a pretty solid group of volunteers.
And then are all those paid through the U of A, or then do the vendors who, are selling hot dogs and burritos and the like, does that include them as well?
They work through student union, and so student union has concessions and catering in the stadium. So they employ a lot of students, but then they also have subs or community groups come in and work their stands, and then those groups tend to get paid right through concessions on a commission basis.
Specifically in regard to tomorrow's season opener, with the Lowell Stevens facility in place in the north end zone, what will we see differently in terms of pre-game, for example, the Wildcat walk, and maybe even some of the festivities as the team comes onto the field?
Well, the Lowell Stevens football facility is certainly a game changer for us, and it impacts everything from timing to entrances to elevators and a whole bunch of other game day operational items. First and foremost, there is a north concourse that's on the fourth level that connects West Stadium to East Stadium. So our congestion that we have at the gate, typically as it's designed now, will lessen once we get through this first game. People are creatures of habit, and they always go into the gate and they hand their ticket to the same person that they've handed it to for 40 years, and they're creatures of habit. But once they find a different way or a more efficient or convenient way to access the stadium, we expect the gate impact and the crowd, we call it the human amoeba, that used to be right out there on the northeast corner near Ank and Cherry, we expect that to dissipate. After this game one, we added much larger gates at gate one and gate two at the northeast corner of the stadium, with on the northeast and northwest some pretty big massive stair towers as well as elevators. And so from an accessibility standpoint, those that are needing access to ADA seating or anybody in general that may be mobility impaired have two new stadium elevators that also are connected on that concourse with tons of amenities in terms of restrooms and concessions that are just a huge upgrade for the general fan.
When Greg Byrne gave the media a tour of the facility this summer, he urged us somewhat unusually to go and look in the bathrooms on the North Concourse. How high did that rate on your list of complaints you got about Arizona Stadium?
It was one of the top three. For sure. We know with an older stadium and an older facility, we absolutely had to upgrade for a large population of fans, the ability for them to buy concessions, use the restrooms, and have access into the stadium. If we could accomplish that, and we did, we have a much better setup in general at Arizona Stadium than we have ever had.
So there is some changes to the Zona Zoo admission, too. I mean, in the past, the kids had to line up, hours and hours before the game, and then they all rushed in so they could pick their cherry seats in the middle of the Zona Zoo section. But I guess now you're reducing the amount of time before you're going to let them into the stadium because you want them to go to Wildcat Walk?
We have there was a kind of a two-prong approach on that one. First and foremost, we were hearing feedback from the students that it's just a long day. And from a lot of them, there were some heat-related issues. Generally, they partake in some adult beverages beforehand, and it just became a...
College students?
Well,
no.
They do, believe it or not. those that were of age. But when they were waiting in line underneath the East Stadium for upwards of 4 hours or 5 hours, it's just a long day. And there wasn't necessarily the healthiest decisions in terms of what they were eating or what they were drinking, hydration issues. So what we're going to do is open those gates when all the other gates open. And the intent was, number one, make it a safer and easier entrance. Number two was alleviate that need for the feel of the students to be in line for so long. And then number three, it's GA seating. And so when they're in their seats, they can kind of go in and get their spots, but there's not a need for, let's say you have 30 or 40 people that you want to sit with. You can kind of have that. We let them save two seats, and they generally self-police that. And the intent or the hope is that they'll get in there and some others will come closer to kickoff or ebb and flow and come in rolling over that 90 minutes and then enjoy the game but stay longer, because we've had a pretty big issue with students exiting at halftime. And most of them felt like, well, I'm here 3 hours prior to kickoff or 4 hours prior to kick, and, you know, 6 hours in, if I know the game's in the bag, I'm gone. So we're hoping to delay that, you know, six-hour window, get it closer to the time of actual kickoff, and then have them stay through the fourth quarter.
Now, aren't you going to try and give them some money, too, to get them to stay?
There are some incentives. So they're working some marketing deals. There's a great Bear Down Brigade that are some activities. You know, that it's not just a football game anymore. It's an event, and the game day atmosphere matters. Those that are technology savvy love to do certain things that are engaged and interactive in-game. And so there's a lot of efforts on behalf of our marketing team to encourage the students to stay, and I believe there is some cash involved.
So one of the complaints I know in the press box is the Wi-Fi connection in the stadium, but it's also really big for a lot of fans now, because they can get online, they can go and check stats through ESPN, or they can even see replays if they missed it on the screen if it's being televised. Has the Wi-Fi been improved in the stadium at all with the new facility?
That is certainly a work in progress. What we have now is a temporary cell site atop the video board at the south end, and what that will do is allow greater access points, allow more people to be on at one time. You know, this is a two-device world, so we have a lot of younger fans and some students that have both the phone and the iPad or any other type of Android device and another device. So what we're going to try to do is we have an agreement with campus-wide to improve the campus Wi-Fi infrastructure in general. So it will not be in place for game one. It's a temporary site for game one and two, but eventually there'll be a DAS system, a distributed antenna system, that will, in essence, allow the stadium to be wireless and allow all 56,000 plus, you know, people to be on at once if they needed to be. We needed to do it from a campus safety and security standpoint, but it also is part of the game and part of the entertainment.
What kind of feedback have you gotten on the new artificial turf, and what kind of upkeep does that take?
We're pretty blown away by that right now. I'm happy to report that I have no calls from football this year, whether they've had to move a practice or not practice on the natural grass to preserve it for game day, because the monsoon can make some of that a mosh pit. And so the flexibility that artificial turf and field turf did an amazing job to get that down and get that in was really instrumental for our program. Not one practice has had to be canceled this year, and about four and a half were impacted last season, just because when you get one of those downpouring rains, right now that field is safe and playable within about 40-45 minutes. The drainage is spectacular, and it's safe and sure footing. The other thing is the monsoons tend to impact lines and receivers and linemen, and everybody else likes to know where their yard markers are and where they're lining up at, and, you know, occasionally where the touchdown line is. So they have a need to be able to paint as often as they can, and that was a real challenge on natural grass. So the flexibility with the stadium space as synthetic and the natural grass at Sunset is really a plus for our program.
That's a good spot for us to take a break. We'll be back with Susie Mason of U of A right after these fine messages from the Buckmaster Show sponsors.
Hey, have you noticed all the road construction in the Tucson area?
Yes, I see lots of road work.
Yeah, in fact, the Regional Transportation Authority is funding work right now for more than a dozen projects, including bus pullouts and intersections.
I
sure see lots of RTA orange signs downtown and in the region.
Yeah, and I hear new RTA projects will begin soon.
Great. The RTA projects makes for better roads and safer driving for all of us.
Getting underway, the Houghton Broadway intersection. The RTA delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan. Better water, pure and simple.
West in La Paloma, Tucson's iconic luxury resort and spa is now better than ever with a $30 million rejuvenation that includes all guest rooms, public spaces, meeting rooms, upgraded golf and tennis, and new pool and lobby areas, plus enhanced dining. And the setting, well, it couldn't be better on 250 acres in the foothills of the Catalinas. Take a look at the rejuvenation at westinlapalomaresort.com.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
And we're back. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI. I'm Mark B. Evans, sitting in for Bill today while he's vacationing in the Great White North. We're talking with Susie Mason, the assistant AD for events at the University of Arizona. Susie, there's been a lot of talk about the facilities arms race amongst all the universities trying to one-up each other to get their kids to come play football for them or basketball or whatever. But there's also, at least in pro football, there's an arms race going on between the stadiums and television, where they're trying to get people to come to the stadiums and enjoy and watch a game rather than sit at home with their big screen TVs and their every game in the universe cable packages and the like. Is college having a similar problem, or are you having to constantly scramble to keep game day interesting, to keep people from just not going and watching it on TV?
I think that's Hey, now, there's always going to be an excuse why some folks don't come, but I still think college sporting events are on campus provides a dynamic like no other, and I'm biased, I know, but I think from the professional side of it, absolutely, because there could be fans for some team all over the country, but here in Tucson, this is Wildcat country, and our fans and our fan base in Southern Arizona and, you know, from Phoenix on down are really supportive of our programs, and I think they really enjoy and are engaged by the game day atmosphere. Absolutely, you can stay home and watch it on TV, but it's a lot more fun to experience that with others. It's kind of a cultural thing, and it's also one of those things where I think people thrive on being part of that crowd, and your living room's not usually crowded. And then the other thing here, we added that video board to Arizona Stadium, and that was a huge upgrade for us. So any of the cool angles and any of the fun in-game items are up there on the biggest true HD board in college football. And part of that was, yes, to engage the fan base, but it's far better than anything you're going to see on any replay in your living room. So we encourage people to come on down and watch and enjoy it with family and friends.
TV does drive the bus, and in some cases, especially for football, you may not know when a game is being played or who's going to cover it until Monday before the Saturday. What kind of scramble does that create in your job in terms of getting everything ready?
It's the known. Obviously, TV drives a lot of things, but once you've done an event once with TV, there's an operational plan in place, and so the people are different, but the script doesn't change. We get them in. They come in for set day the day before. They do their walkthroughs. You know, the teams are generally accessible, and then the show goes on. I think when you get into events and operations for a living, the chaos of game day is the challenge, and that's what a lot of us kind of thrive on. We also know that, you know, no matter what, our jobs are to make it look as seamless as possible, so our customers in stadium, those that are watching on TV, may not know if we lost power, may not know if there was a, you know, a blip on the screen or whatnot. I think if anybody watched the Super Bowl, you know, my voicemail and my phone was blown up during that, but those things happen, and it's not necessarily when they happen that are the most convenient, but how you manage them and how you handle them. And here I think we have a great team and staff in place that addresses those. From a TV standpoint, they get it. They're in a different stadium every week, so we're just plugging in names and going with a standard operation.
So this might not be in your bailiwick, but assuming that if there are these changes, it would definitely affect what it is that you do. But do you know what the plans are for the further renovation of McHale, and do you think we'll ever see an NCAA regional game here again?
I do know the plans. We're working with an architect now, and we'll be working with a contractor here, hopefully making some noise and starting to make some renovations in later in 2014. What we want to do is certainly what we did at the Lowell Stevens football facility, making sure that we can make dynamic changes that affect not only our teams and our programs and our student athletes, but general fans and donors alike. So what we hope to do is really, this is a wonderful facility. It's 40 years old, though, and it's time to upgrade and make it a modern-day facility.
We had a caller who called in and wanted to ask a question about how many people are actually come to these games, both at McHale and even Hillebrand and at Arizona Stadium.
So you're looking for attendance at each?
Yeah.
So 56, just over 56,000, 56,083 will be our technical new capacity at the stadium in terms of seated guests. We're just short, just 14,545 here at McHale Center is full capacity. And then Hillenbrand, we have a great crowd over there at Hillenbrand Softball Stadium. We're typically over 2,000 in game, but we have 2,700 seats plus standing room only that's available at that facility.
So with the McHale renovation coming down the road, do you see Arizona getting back into the hosting for the NCAA tournament?
That's certainly an opportunity that we'd like to explore. There's a lot of reasons why we'd love to host, and the economic impact of Tucson is certainly one of them. But having other folks from around the country and eight different teams in and being part of March Madness is important. I think we need to look carefully where and when we do that. The drive ramp into McHale is not really a drive ramp. And as you know, they bring in their own floors now, their own tables, their own baskets. And trying to do that manually, and we did it in 2011, is incredibly labor-intensive. And there's some safety issues with that. So if we make those kind of adjustments, we can. We have no intention to become a civic arena. And if you look at college basketball, they are tending and trending towards going to some of those bigger civic arenas. And that's not us, and that's not Tucson. So we will kind of dance that dance carefully as we go down the road, but certainly something we've discussed as an administrative team here.
Have y'all had conversations with the city about the impact that the streetcar, once it gets running next year, might have on getting people to and from the games and the park and ride program through SunTran?
Absolutely. We actually started those conversations with some different folks in the Richard Miranda's office, and our senior leadership team has had two or three meetings that we've discussed what that impact could be. And when that comes online, the greatest benefit certainly could be football, men's basketball, and softball game day, with a drop right outside Hillenbrand Stadium, essentially at the corner of First Street and Warren. It is an easy access to Hillenbrand, easy access to any places for tailgating, as well as both Arizona Stadium and McHale Center. So we will further those conversations as the cars come online, and then even, you know, look at what downtown parking options may be available or access right in and off the interstate to pick it up at a downtown line and be dropped right at the university.
Because the parking could be a big deal, because you still have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people who park out in the in the neighborhoods for game day, and then walk to the stadium and get tickets and things, and you know, you don't have any control over them getting the ticket, but that has to put a kind of a black spot on their overall experience, right?
Yes, and we've heard that complaint and that concern before, and you know, when we message it out, it's to park in a legal space, you know, and any rules and regulations about away from a fire hydrant, or you know, I think it's 5 feet or greater away from a driveway, and recognizing all the signs that are in place. But, you know, some of those are hard to see at night, and it is a challenge. I would encourage anybody, if they haven't visited our website for Game Day Central, there are plenty of parking options right on campus that are underutilized. And I know, as I've traveled across the country and seen other stadiums, lots I've parked in before that are a mile away from a facility sell for $50 a lot at a lot of stadiums. And we've got free parking at Highland and Garage and Tyndall Garage for carpools of four or more for free on game day that are literally within a 10-minute or less walk to the stadium, plus a whole bunch of other surrounding lots that are surface lots that are $5. That are not even paid and utilized to their maximum capacity on game day.
So real quick, we only got about 30 seconds. I have to ask you this question because it's a big issue with me. Will we ever see you go from Pepsi to Coke?
We like Diet Coke. I'm a Diet Coke fiend.
All right. Susie Mason, thanks very much. This is the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back after the break with Matt Dudick with U of A Recruiting. Susie, thank you again very much.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's V-S-C-O-T.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Looking for that perfect late summer getaway? I recommend historic Bear Mountain Lodge, just minutes from the picturesque heart of Silver City, New Mexico, only 3.5 hours east of Tucson. Ranked number one on TripAdvisor, Bear Mountain Lodge sits on 178 secluded acres nestled against the immense grandeur of the Gila National Forest. Check out this lovely high country tranquil oasis at BearMountainLodge.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico make a great getaway for a weekend or longer. It's just 3 hours or so from Tucson and 15 degrees cooler to get to an area with so much to offer, from hiking, camping, exploring downtown historic Silver City, or just relaxing in a lovely environment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and visit in Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Mark B. Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, sitting in for Bill today. And I'm joined by my cerebral compatriot and sports administrator at TucsonCitizen.com, Anthony Gimeno. Joining us now on the show is Matt Dudick, who's responsible for sealing the deal with all those stellar recruits who come to Arizona to play ball. Matt, welcome.
Hey, what's up, guys? I like that smooth jazz at the beginning right there.
There you go.
How about a little bit of that at practice?
Oh, I don't know if that'll get the guys going.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, since you're well accustomed to Anthony pestering you for information, I'm going to let Anthony ask you the first question here.
Well, in a lot of ways, Matt, you are... you have kind of become the face of the program. You're very visible on Twitter. You appear in a lot of the videos, the very fun videos UA has produced over the last couple of years. You are a prodigious tweeter of waffles from the new Bear Down Kitchen. So related to the Lowell Stevens facility, we know you love the new kitchen, and it's open to the public, which I think is very cool, and we'll be checking out soon. But from a player's perspective, from the feedback you have gotten, what is the most popular part of that new facility?
Well, first, I don't think I'm the face of the program, I don't think. I'm more of just a loud, annoying uncle, so to speak, of the program. But from the player's standpoint, from the current players, they love everything about it. I mean, just the convenience of having the locker room next to the weight room and the weight room next to the equipment room and the equipment room next to the training room. They love just being around there. And just basically, other than class and the academic center, they can just come to one building and get everything done they need for the course of the day. And then from a recruiting standpoint, obviously, it, it, you just walk into it, and it's one of these amazing places. It rivals anything in the country from both aesthetically and then just functionality.
So after you're done trying to sell a prospective student on coming here for their sport or the program and the school, what's the first thing you try to sell them about Tucson?
I would say that, you know, the weather certainly is a big plus. You know, 350 days of sunshine. I'm a guy from Pittsburgh. I think we get 350 days of rain there or snow. So I would say the weather. And then just being a college town, just being the only show in town, everybody cares. Everywhere where you go, there's A's in the windows. Everybody loves the Wildcats regardless of what sport it is.
We know you can't talk about specific recruits, but big picture in general, your 2004 recruiting class is already nearly full. What are the risks and rewards that you have to weigh in terms of getting a class done so early?
I think it's it's kind of an anomaly. You know, this is my sixth year doing this, and this is the first time. The last 2 years have been the first time where we've had so many commitments so early. Usually you're looking at 13 or 14, but, you know, we just have such a great thing going here that guys want to get on board early, especially with our coaching staff, Coach Rodriguez. The guys absolutely love him, all of our assistant coaches. I don't think the risks are not too high. We're evaluating our own players. The coaches do an extensive evaluation process. We know exactly what we're getting. And then I would say the reward is you get guys on board early and they start recruiting each other. I mean, it's great when Coach Rodriguez or myself or any of the assistant coaches say, hey, this is a great place. We're family. We do all these things. You know, that's great. But when you're hearing it from another guy, you're hearing it from one of your teammates or one of your opponents or a guy that you know is a great player in California, I think all that together, that really helps your class.
How significant is it when you get someone who didn't take one of their official visits? They came here on an unofficial visit, which means they had to pay for it. And then they come, and then they sign with you after that. Is that a big coup to be able to achieve that? It means you kind of really snake them away from somebody else where they had the official visit to.
Yeah, absolutely, no question. I think it's great when guys come in unofficially, like you said, they spend their own money, and you know the difference is of the tours and the difference of the interaction. There's really not a whole lot of difference other than we're paying for your meals and we're paying for your flight and paying for your hotel. You know, you're still getting the same personality of Coach Rodriguez. You're still getting the same personality of the assistant coaches. So I think that the fact that guys are coming to Tucson in the summer or before the times where they can take official visits, it shows that big things are on the horizon. And the fact that they want to take up one of those spots before they even take the official visit and see a game and all those things, I mean, that's really important.
And how do you know when you think a player is really serious or whether they're just looking for a free trip to Tucson?
Well, I think that you could tell by the time we're recruiting guys, you know, September 1st coming up right now is when we can start getting in contact via mail, via Facebook, via email with some of these juniors. But you know the guys by the time their official visit season rolls around. You know if a guy's really serious or not. If he hasn't talked to you all summer, he hasn't picked up the phone and call you because he can call you anytime he wants. If they're not doing those things, responding to Facebook messages, you know there's not a whole lot of interest. And then, you know, if they're from a cold part of this the country and they give you a call in October because they see the sunshine or something, you know that they're really just looking for a free trip. But I don't think we get too much of that, Tucson. I think we have genuine interest. And the guys we bring in, we know they have genuine interest.
Matt, I know you've been daily following my top 50 countdown of Arizona's greatest football players.
Absolutely. And who doesn't?
Exactly. Who wouldn't? But what strikes me, or what has struck me, especially in the top 20, are the number of guys who switched positions in college. Trunk Candidate was a cornerback before he was a running back. Darrell Lewis was the team's best running back before he became the Jim Thorpe Award winner at cornerback. Lance Briggs was an offense. Dennis Northcutt switched sides. So that's a long way of getting into a question of what does Rich tell recruits when they seem adamant that they're only a quarterback or only a running back? What in general do you tell a prospect about what his future might be?
I think Coach Rodriguez and all the assistant coaches, they're very honest and upfront about what we're evaluating them as. That's something the coach wants from all angles of recruiting. Is we're going to be honest. We're going to be ourselves. We're not going to pull any punches. We're not going to trick any kids. We're not in the business of tricking 16-year-old kids. And if we're recruiting you as a quarterback, we're going to tell you, hey, we love you as a quarterback, but just so you know, you're a guy that's maybe down on the board a little bit, but we love you as an athlete. Do we think you could also be a corner or a wide receiver? But we want to recruit you as a quarterback, give you the opportunity to come in and play a quarterback, and then if it doesn't work out down the line, we're going to put you in the best place so you can get on the field and help us win football games.
So there's so much money in college sports now, and you know the coaching salaries are through the roof. You got to win because you have to win in order to bring in the money, and you have to have the players to win. So there must be an enormous amount of pressure on you to wear out several phones a week and keep up with all these kids and bring them to town. How do you deal with that pressure and how do you manage a day so that you can keep yourself sane?
Well, I think that. It's every coach. I mean, I'm the guy where all the information eventually filters through, but it's every coach working the phones and the Facebook and everything. But, I think that, really what it comes down to is I love what I do. The coaches love what they do. And you're going to hustle and try to get the best players. Just, one, it's prideful. You want, as an assistant coach, you want to say you got that guy to commit. And really, it's stressful, of course, because you want to get, I guess ultimately your job's on the line, to kind of put it in your words. But if you're doing it right and you're loving what you're doing, you don't feel that pressure day to day. You just want to go out there, get the best players, and win some football games.
So the coaches are still recruiting even during the season? They're not just getting ready to play USC?
No, absolutely not. I mean, every one of our coaches, starting September 1st for the seniors now, the coaches are allowed to make one phone call a week to our senior prospects. So we're gearing up to get ready to do that. They're still writing handwritten letters every single day to our recruits. They're still sending their Facebook messages. They're still answering the phone. So really the season is the most hectic time for them. It's when they amp up and they're trying to get game plan ready. But, player X calls you on the phone. You want to make sure you answer his call and make sure he's playing well and that he's still feeling the love.
The NCAA gives you 25 initial scholarships per year. How big is that number when you start sending out your scholarship offers? How big does that number get?
From an offer standpoint,
right.
I think that you look to get to be between 4 and 5 offers to one guy that's going to accept it, so 125, 150 offers. And that's based on different positions. Obviously, you're going to offer more offensive linemen or defensive linemen if you have some needs there. Obviously, the way we run wide receivers, we're going to offer a couple more wide receivers every year. The way we're running those guys on and off the field. So I think that, ideally you're looking at maybe 5 or 6 to one guy that accepts it. But certainly there are years where you got to put out 200, and certainly there's years where, God willing, you're only offering 25 guys, and all of them are saying yes.
So we only got about a minute, but I wanted to ask you a question about something that happened this week. One of your recruits who's still playing high school football broke his leg or had some sort of horrible leg injury. What happens when something like that? Is it cold-blooded and say, well, sorry, we're going to have to go find somebody else to give the scholarship to? Or do you stick by that kid, and if it looks like he can rehab, you're still going to bring him to town?
I think one of our, I don't want to say sales pitches, because that makes it sound like we're trying to use car sales guy, but one thing that Coach Rodriguez is very adamant about, if you stick with us, we stick with you. So a guy, if he would get injured, regardless of severity, we're all in with the guy. If you're committed to us, then we're committed to you, and we will bring you on campus, and we'll do the best we can. If a guy suffers a career-ending injury in high school, then we're going to bring him in, and he's going to be one heck of a student assistant for us or one heck of a recruiting intern.
All right, so we got to leave it there. Mr. Dudek, thanks very much for calling into the show today. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you guys for having me.
We'll be back after these messages. Bear down, right?
Bear down.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit RTAMobility.com or Facebook.
The nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Organization, Tucson Wildlife Center, is in the midst of a capital campaign to build Arizona's first state-of-the-art hospital for wildlife. The facility will help staff and volunteers care for nearly 1,000 raptors and mammals it receives each year at its Far East Side facility. To donate online, go to TucsonWildlife.com. For more information about wildlife rescue, visit the website or call 290-WILD. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
At Cox Business, we don't cook the entrees.
Order up.
But we are in the restaurant business. Just ask Kirsten Traina, co-owner of the Liberty Market Restaurant.
Power burger with cheddar.
She prefers doing business with local suppliers, including produce from a local farm, and internet and phone service from Cox Business. She counts on us for reliable internet, with speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL and feature-rich business phone service.
Margarita pizza.
And our award-winning local support team is available 24/7. Visit coxbusiness.com to get business internet select and phone for only $99 per month. Plus, ask about next-day professional installation.
And a carrot cake.
That's for me. Switch to Cox Business today and see how your business is our business. Offer valid until 9/30/13. Prices exclude taxes and other fees and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Speed comparison based on max download speed of Cox Business Internet service 150 megabits per second versus basic DSL 1.5 megabits per second service. Other restrictions may apply. Next day install subject to availability. Eligibility restrictions may apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We're talking Arizona athletics today on the show, but we're going to switch gears a little and talk about the Pac-12 football, because if you want to know how Arizona is going to do, you got to know how good the Pac-12 might be. To help us do that, we're having on the show now Doug Haller, who's a sports writer for the Arizona Republic, who covers ASU and the Pac-12. Doug, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. How's it going?
It's going really good. So Arizona this year has now opened its latest salvo in the facilities arms race, which are compatriots with Gannett, which is the Republic is also a Gannett-owned organization, has been doing this arms race series. And so Arizona's got its offer in there with Lowell Stevens. What's up at ASU? Are they keeping up with the Joneses and the University of Phil Knight?
I don't know if anyone's keeping it up at quite that pace, but yeah, I mean, that's what they're trying to do. They're still planning to renovate Sun Devil Stadium, which is in badly need of renovation. But as of right now, you know, they're still kind of researching that, trying to figure out what they want to do and when they want to do it, and also how they want to do it. You know, they have options as far as kind of keeping the lower bowl intact and just kind of building around it, or tearing it all down and starting over. I think they're leaning towards, you know, just the lower bowl option. And it looks like we're still a couple of years away from that. They're still trying to put together their plan of finance and, you know, also figure out what they're going to do as far as, you know, can they find a way to play at the stadium while this is, you know, going on, or if they'll have to move out. I think they'll have to move out, but they're still, you know, trying to research that. I think that likely option would be Chase Field at downtown Phoenix, but nothing's official yet.
The Cardinals wouldn't welcome them?
It was, as always said, like, why not University of Phoenix Stadium? Well, you know, for one thing, given the history of those two parties, the Cardinals and Arizona State, I don't see that happening. And also, it's all the way across the valley in Glendale, and that's another obstacle. It would be hard to get students out there. So, you know, I would be really, really surprised if that's where they ended up playing.
Weren't there drawings at one time of mocks of covering in some fashion Sun Devil Stadium, or were those just kind of fanciful ideas?
Well, I would lean toward the latter on that, Anthony. You know, it was pretty cool looking, kind of futuristic looking, that they did have a canopy covering the seating, the fans, and, you know, as you know, that's always an obstacle out here in the desert in the early months of the season. But, you know, they kind of threw that out there at the beginning, and I think it was kind of like, here's our wish list, here's what we'd like to do, let's see how much money we can raise to see if we can make that a reality, and that's where we're at right now, kind of them trying to figure out the finances of it. I don't think what we saw back, man, it was 2 years ago when they came out with that, maybe not quite that, but I don't think that's going to be the finished product. But I do think that they kind of put that out there. It's like, this would be ideal. Now let's see how close to it we can get.
So Arizona's big ticket item was the Lowell Stevens facility. So now ASU is talking about redoing its stadium. Now Arizona is switching to its basketball arena. What's the status with the quality of the basketball arena for ASU?
Well, it's, you know, it's kind of an older facility. It's too big for ASU basketball, and I don't think, you know, that's a secret to anyone. You know, it would be great if they had a facility that kind of seated 8,000 fans. And I don't think that's just ASU. I think a lot of Pac-12 schools would do great in an arena that size, obviously U of A excluded. You know, it's just a little too big, and that kind of takes away from the atmosphere. And as you know, the last few years there hasn't been a lot of atmosphere in there to begin with. But lately, with Jahi Carson last year, I thought they kind of picked things up a little bit. But as of right now, I think their main focus is to figure out what they're going to do with the football stadium and then turn their attention to the basketball arena. As you guys probably know, I think maybe 18 months ago, 2 years ago, they reduced the capacity, put up that wall. It kind of took away the upper 10 rows, which I think kind of helped. I mean, it is what it is, but I do think it kind of helped. It just made it a little bit more intimate, and I would emphasize a little there, but you know, it's on the back burner. They still have a lot of stuff going with this facilities district that they're playing on. And as you guys may have heard, USA Basketball is going to move its headquarters to Tempe. So I think that's all part of it. But we're just kind of in the beginning phases of all this overhaul.
So let's talk a little Pac-12 football, see if we can start an argument. Who do you got, Oregon or Stanford?
I have Oregon.
Good. I've got Stanford. So bring it. What do you got? Why?
Their quarterback. I mean, I think that he's, you know, if you're going to start somewhere, they have the perfect quarterback to run their offense. I don't expect a lot of changes in their offense from the Chip Kelly days. And I think when you have a guy that was really good last year, I think he's going to take a bigger step. And when you have a guy like Marcus Mariota, you're going to be tough to beat.
And is the South just wide open? It's anybody's possible to go be the roadkill for either Stanford or Oregon in the championship game?
Well, Anthony, you can't go wrong with Stanford, but why do you like them over Oregon?
I think I just absolutely love their defensive front. They're so physical, big. The offensive line has so many great young players who are probably really ready right now. And Hogan, a quarterback, I think when he became the starter late last year, really solidified what they were trying to do on offense. And He's a really big kid who has a lot of moxie, too, in terms of being able to run the ball. So I think that combination and probably Oregon's switch of head coaches scared me off just a tiny little bit to give Stanford a little bit of an edge. But in part related to that question, let's assume for a second Alabama is going to play in the national title game. Which pack
do we have to?
Yeah, well, it's just because it's the SEC is because what we do. Which Pac-12 team would you rather see as a matchup? Would you rather see Oregon matching up against Alabama with that speed, or would you like to see Stanford with its power matching up against the Tide?
you know, when you put it that way, and that's a great way to look at it, I think I probably would rather see Stanford and go power against power, just because, you know, I think we've seen Oregon in a national championship game against an SEC school, and even though it was a good game, you know, and Oregon had a lot of weapons that year, and I actually thought Oregon would beat Auburn that year, but I think we've seen that. I would like to see Stanford's power, and as you mentioned, with their offensive line and their defense, I think that would be a really good matchup.
So what do you think about the North-South Pac-12 split for football? Do you think that it was, in the long term, that's been good for the conference? Seems to me it's keeping more schools with two conference losses in the running for possibly for their division championship, which could put them in the championship game, and then you never know what might happen.
As far as the split of schools, is that what you're talking about?
Right, the split in the conference, in the North and South of the Pac-12.
Well, I just think it's the timing of when they made the split. I mean, it just came at a time when Oregon and Stanford were really coming along. You have the two best teams really at the top of the, or in the North, and then, you know, it also coincided with USC's kind of fall, and, you know, I think that's just kind of, you know, just the timing of it. You know, sometimes I look at it, I'm like, why did they put both Utah and Colorado in the South? But, you know, Washington State's down, it seems like, almost every year. And then, you know, I think California's going to be down, so maybe it evens out. But, you know, I think in a few years, it you know, the balance of power in the Pac-12 could shift maybe to the South.
The Republic's columnist, Paula Boyven, a couple of days ago wrote about Todd Graham and how he may have kind of outkicked his press clippings, that he's proven to be more popular now than the day he was hired. Why do you think that is? What has he done?
Well, I do agree with what Paula wrote. I don't think there's any question that, you know, I think a lot of people in Tempe, I mean, the hiring came out of the blue. You know, they were going to go with June Jones, and that fell apart at the last second. And then after that, everyone's sources really tightened up, and all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, here's Todd Graham. So, and, you know, just given his history, there was a lot of, like, what are we getting ourselves into here? But the main thing that people were really disgusted with the program was just the lack of discipline. And, you know, it wasn't just the penalties on the field. And it wasn't so much, you know, it wasn't a bunch of guys under Dennis Erickson getting in trouble off the field, getting arrested. It was just a general, I mean, there was, you know, fights in the locker room. Just not a whole lot of accountability. So the fact that they went from 104 penalties, called penalties, and obviously there were more declined in Dennis's last year, to, I think, in the 50s, almost nearly half of that in 1 year, I think really impressed people and got them on board. I mean, it was one thing. That was the first step. The second step was winning the Territorial Cup. And really, for the first year, that's pretty much anybody really wanted. It was clean it up and, you know, beat the rival, and we're behind you from year one. Now, obviously, he has a lot more to prove, and you can't just, you know, beat the Utahs and the schools that are struggling every year. You have to start, you know, making a dent against those powers. But so, for the first year, I think he really did a good job of igniting the fan base when he was out. I mean, you've heard him speak. He's got a sense of passion to his voice, and it's really what the program needed, because it really got stale in those final years.
We're going to have to wrap it up. Doug, thanks very much for participating with us today. It was very helpful. We appreciate it. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show today. I need to let you know the bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is provided by Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or business. Couldn't have done this today without Anthony. Anthony, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Mark.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.